This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
And good afternoon, everyone. I trust you're having a great afternoon. Beautiful fallish day, isn't it? This is technically, I guess, the last day of summer. So if you happen to be out and about, do enjoy it. I am suffering from a little bit of a head cold, so you'll have to forgive me if I've been having a few little coughing fits as of late. So our producer is on the button, so to speak, in case I lose it this afternoon. But we shall persevere. Well, you may have noticed in the last couple of brief sessions in the House of Assembly that one MHA in particular is making a quiet impression, if you will, with her no-nonsense, straightforward and thoughtful approach to issues facing the province and, in particular, the people of her district. My guest today is the MHA for Torngat Mountains, Leela Evans. Hello, Leela.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and I guess I should get this out in the open right away. You and I are neighbors.
Yes.
So,
yes, we are.
In case
we are. We hardly see each other, though.
We are like two ships passing in the night. You are always on the go, and you're a very, very busy woman. So I do appreciate you taking the time with us this afternoon. I guess for the benefit of our listeners now, let's start with the basics. Who is Leela Evans?
Well, I'm the MHA for Torngat Mountains, and I can actually say that now without laughing too much, because it's a surprising position I find myself in, because I didn't think I would actually be the MHA for the Torngat Mountains.
So how did you become involved in politics then?
Well, I think it was because... I was interested in Nunatsiavut government politics from a very early age, the Labrador Inuit Association, but I got involved in the provincial level because of encouragement from my family and people in the district. They really wanted me to run, and there was no one else running, actually, in this last election, so I put my name forward.
And you won. You told me privately that you weren't expecting to win, but you did, and you're taking this on now. What kind of a learning curve is involved there?
Well, honestly, the learning curve, I think, is greater than most people realize, because, first off, you have all these political issues to deal with that's on a provincial level, and there's also issues from your district, and some of them is not even at the level of government that you're involved in. Like with me, I get a lot of calls from you know, about issues at different levels of government. Some of them are federal, some of them are municipal level. Also, there's like an emotional learning curve, I call it, because, you know, you're there and you're, you know, as a critic for me, because I'm not in government, I'm coming out and saying things, and a lot of times it's contrary to what the government wants you to be saying, or a lot of times they want you to be silent. So there's a little bit of, like I said, a learning curve there, that you have to deal with your own internal stress, and also trying to build relationships that get eroded, just as like the way the water comes in and washes the sand away. When you're in government, I find that everything changes, and you have to just keep up, and you just got to try and keep your eyes on the prize, which is looking after your district.
How do you maintain that integrity that's, you know, so important to individuals, and yet, you know, like you say, there's a learning curve in trying to balance that with the needs of the party and the needs of government as a whole?
Well, with me, it's a little bit easier, because when I got into caucus, I said, like, I'm the person that watches the 5 o'clock or the 6 o'clock news. I'm on the other side of the TV talking to the TV about politics. That's where I'm coming from. I'm coming from the angle that, you know, everybody in the Labrador comes from. Used to now.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but was politics always sort of important in your household or in amongst your family?
It was always important, you know, just the same as the news was always important. that's one thing in my family. We always watch the news. We always listen to the news. We always follow the news. We were always involved in politics at a provincial level, at a municipal level, and at a Inuit community government level.
Are there barriers to getting things done that you weren't aware of before entering politics?
Well, it's not as organized as I thought it would be. And also, you know, like, I was raised in my house. My parents and my grandmother, they always talked about the greater good. You know, the greater good for the community, the greater good for a family. But what I see in politics is there's not much thought that goes into the greater good. It's about, you know, personal agendas and, you know, business interests and a lot of that goes on the government side. And to me, that I find that a bit disheartening. And I'm starting to realize why the situations are that exist that you normally, a person would question, right?
So you're in opposition now. Do you think that your job is more effective in opposition, or would you like to at some point be on the government side?
Oh, I'd rather be in government, you know, because you have much more access to information. First off, you're not just in the role of a critic, and also you have the ability to impact decisions. And I'd like to start talking about the greater good. I'd like to get in government and start saying, well, what's best for the district? What's best for the, you know, overall for the province? What's best for the districts that, you know, don't have so much? Like, I think politics can change, but only if the MHAs will it to change. And that's what I'd like to get at. I'd like to be over there on the other side and start questioning some of the decisions that's made.
I wanted to get into your district because I know you feel very passionately about the coast of Labrador. We're going to talk a little bit about Torngat Mountains and the challenges being faced there right after this. My guest today on Target St. John's is Leela Evans. Please stay tuned.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And my guest today on Target St. John's is the MHA for Torngat Mountains District, Leela Evans. And Leela, what challenges are unique to your district?
Well, I think the biggest problem that I have within my district now is we don't have road access to the Trans-Labrador Highway. And that impacts every aspect of my district. It impacts the ability for people to travel, the high cost of travel, it costs the food security. Just getting the food up into the North Coast now costs four times as much as it used to before they took off the freight ferry, we call it, the freight boat. It's actually really impacting our communities on a social and financial level, you know. And I wasn't really aware of the huge impact, you know. When I ran, I was running because I was really trying to do something about the prices of food on the North Coast with the change in the way they were doing the marine transportation. But like I said, this is a big wake up call for me. They not have access to that road, and it's just basically pushing my district back. And I think that's contrary to public opinion. When you look at the public opinion in the province, a lot of people think that my district has a lot because it has self-government, and you know, with the indigenous population of the Inuit, and also with the Inuit with the reserve. But the opposite is true. It's creating huge hardship and huge costs, and the ability to actually even heat their homes is impacted.
You say it comes at a social cost. What do you mean by that?
Well, just looking at the, say, for example, Nain, which is our most northern community, is the biggest community, you know, on the North Coast, the community of Nain. For one single person to travel from Goose Bay from Nain to Goose Bay costs $996, right? When you're trying to travel to Goose Bay return. Now, if you're traveling with three people, you're looking at $3,000. So what ends up happening is people can't afford to travel. And so there, it creates a social isolation. It stunts people's, social development, and it really limits people. In addition to that, it costs a lot, not only for travel, but for food. Like, I was showing a picture of to my caucus members of a picture that was taken in the stores on the North Coast for 4 pork chops. It was actually $28. So if there's 4 people in a family, to buy those 4 pork chops costs $28, and that's just for one meal, and that's without any additional food. And if you're looking at the price of gasoline, the gasoline on the North Coast this winter was frozen at $1.53 a liter. So if you wanted to go and haul wood to heat your home, you had to pay these huge prices for gasoline, and it's getting further and further to go. But at the time when I did my cost analysis, a drum of stove oil for a furnace cost $100 more for one drum on the North Coast. So just looking at all these things, it's really isolating, and also it's a huge financial burden. And a lot of people in Newfoundland and Labrador don't realize that. And when they look at my district, they only see what's on the news, and it's usually problems. And they sort of blame my people for the problems, and a lot of these problems are repeating itself because there's no solution. I usually talk about the conversation I had on the elevator. And the conversation went like this. I got on the elevator and somebody said, "Ma, you're doing a good job. Your district got a lot of problems, and decide." And I said, "My district don't have a lot of problems. The problem with my district of Torngat Mountains is the problems have never been solved." So you take a district, you get problems here and there. Those problems get worked on, they get solved. The district moves on. My district, the problems never get solved. They just continue to accumulate and accumulate. That's why people think we have a lot of problems. And that's why I ran to try to bring these issues to light, Linda. It's so important for me, and that's why I'm really cautious. Like, every time I stand up in the House to speak on an issue, I have to be very cautious. Every time I speak on an issue or reply on an issue on social media, I had to be very, very cautious, because I feel that if I make one mistake, that mistake will be used to discredit me, and it'll impact my ability to get things done. And it's so important. There's so many people relying on me to get the voice out there and try to make changes. Right. So with me, it's not about being the MHA. It's not about having a job. It's not about being in the House of Assembly. It's about trying to provide a voice that gets the attention of the province so that there's pressure to make changes, because nobody in government is going to help my district unless they're pressured to do so. And the only way I can do that is by raising the issue and having people out there hear it and know what's the truth and say, that's not right, something needs to be done about that. The person on the other side of the TV talking about the news, that's basically the voice that I'm trying to convey. And it's so important, because in my district right now, it's really, really hard. It's impacting everybody.
Road access to the coast of Labrador is something that's been discussed or explored before. It hasn't been seen as feasible. It's a huge, vast area. Is it realistic? Is it doable? What do you foresee? How would it work?
Well, that's said, but that's not accurate. Because if you look at the south coast of Labrador, the road from the tip of the south coast of Labrador up to Goose Bay is no longer than the road going from Goose Bay to Nain. And you look at rivers, mountains, streams, forest, south coast road encountered all of that. The road that they put in recently to the south coast, the road that they put in recently connecting Lab West to Goose Bay. So the thing about it is, it's no different. So why were we omitted? Why were we left out when they put in the plans, when they did the feasibility, and when they built the roads? and they call it a Trans-Labrador Highway. I'm going to say right here, right now, a road brings a power line, which is electricity. So who would lose out when the diesel-generating plants were no longer needed, where the bulk fuel was no longer needed? What business would lose out? When you also look at the road, when you put a road in, you don't use the ferry anymore, so that contract would have been canceled. Right now on the North Coast, that ferry that doesn't operate for 6 months of the year, less than 6 months of the year, there's a $14.5 million contract. So when the road was being built, why was there pressure? Why was the road not built to the North Coast? Who would have lost out? Which business would have lost out? And I keep asking people that. I know the answer. Why isn't anyone else talking about that? The bulk fuel wouldn't have been needed because of the power line. So one business would have lost out. Also, the thing about it is, when you look at it, is the ferry would have been canceled. So who would have lost? And I got to say, there's been political pressure that interfered with the North Coast, the six Indigenous communities, and getting a road. And I'll stand behind that any day. And that was just one of the things that I think needs to change. We need to stop politicking for single, individual, big businesses. There's nothing wrong with helping out businesses. There's nothing wrong with looking at the economy and generating businesses and jobs. There's nothing wrong with that. In actual fact, we need to advocate for that. But when we're doing it out of partisan politics and giving it to individual businesses that support you in the political realm, that's not right. And Newfoundlanders and Labradorians need to know that, right? We got to stop that. That has to stop. We need to get ahead of the province. We need to work together, not just be self-serving, individual, agendas.
You mentioned a road would bring a power line, and you've raised this issue in the House of Assembly as well in recent days about electricity rates on the coast of Labrador in particular. How do they differ from the rest of the province, and what would a power line mean?
Well, first off, when you look at the North Coast, just south of Nain, the most northern community is Voisey's Bay, Nickel Valley. Now, you know what I mean? The huge mine that's generated billions of dollars, you know, to the provincial coffers. They're going underground now. They need even more electricity. And you know what I mean? So that's cutting into their revenues, is cutting into the profit sharing for the province. So a power line would have been a huge help for that, and also would have supplied markets for Muskrat Falls and even for future Gull Island if needed. But when you look at it right now, up in Voisey's Bay, not talking about the North Coast diesel generating plants. When you look at Voisey's Bay, the operation, the nickel operation there that generates so much money for the province. Right now on site, they have three tanks that's 11 million liters of diesel each. You imagine how much consumption that is. And you look at the greenhouse gas emissions. So a power line would have helped us have a cleaner environment, less carbon taxes, all this kind of stuff, you know what I mean? And also it would have provided a clean, reliable energy to the development. And then when you look at each community needs electricity, so we have the diesel power plants on the North Coast, right? So a power line would have changed all that. Right now on the North Coast, most families can't afford electric heat, because there's a cap. There's the life block is up to 1,000 kilowatt hours. After you go over that, and you basically, if you're using any kind of electric heat, you go over 1,000 kilowatt hours. It actually goes up to 18.5 cents a kilowatt hour, which I think is the most in the north, anywhere in the province. So when you look at that, what you're doing is you're forcing people to either haul wood. And like I said, I already talked about how expensive the gasoline is for your snowmobile and the distance Hope Delaney has to travel to get wood, or the stove oil. And like I already told you, $100 more a drum on the North Coast. And what happens is when people can't actually physically haul the wood themselves, or they don't have enough family to do it themselves, they're forced to rely on the oil. And as I said in the House of Assembly when I read my petition, I've known seniors that spent their entire check, their check, all their money that they're getting for stove oil. And that then, like, what are they going to eat? if they don't have family that helps them with food and other necessities of life, then basically they have to actually have a cold house. And on the North Coast, when it gets minus 20, minus 30, minus 40, you can't have a cold house because everything freezes. So, you know what I mean? Our vulnerable populations are made more vulnerable. So, Linda, like, that's where my passion comes from. Right, that's the problems. And also too, when you got low income families and your house is cold and your kids are looking at you because you're deciding on heating your house or feeding your kids, you're failing as a parent either way, right? So what does that say to the parents? And then also, what does it say to the children, right? So we talk about intergenerational trauma, but you know something, the biggest problem I've seen is that there is nothing done to really address changing that. And that's what I said at another time when people listen to what I'm saying. You know what I mean? And that's why I try and speak as clearly as I can. Intergenerational trauma is not a thing of the past. The future generations that's coming up now are being impacted by intergenerational trauma. And unless we can actually make food affordable, and we can actually provide a reliable sense of a heated home and just help people with the basic necessities, things are not going to change. It's not going to change. And that's why, like I said, I'm really, really careful with every word that I say. And I think about it, I make sure it's clear, and I make sure it's the truth. Because the thing about it is, if I don't stand and speak, nobody else is going to do it.
Lila Evans, the MHA for Torn Gap Mountains, is my guest on Target St. John's today. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
We're back. My guest today on Target St. John's is the MHA for Torn Gap Mountains, Lila Evans. And Lila, you were talking about the necessity for a road connecting the north coast of Labrador to the remainder of the province and North America, for that matter. There was a recent issue involving Rigolet and the gas station there. We've seen problems with gas stations and keeping them sustainably running in some isolated communities in Labrador in the past. What's the latest now on Rigolet?
Well, the only gas station that's really run into any problems has been Rigolet, unfortunately, and it has to do with the population size. Now, one of the things that's, you know, I guess for lack of a better word, is ironic is Rigolet is actually a vibrant community. They have good jobs. You know, there's seasonal work, there's permanent work. A lot of people work up in Voisey's Bay. They have government jobs. So the only problem that Rigolet is experiences is with their gas station, and it's because of the numbers there. Now, one of the things that I pointed out to government, and I'm actually doing up a letter now to submit, is when you look at all the fuel, you know, diesel or gasoline that's actually sold in the community of Rigolet, is there's a lot. The problem is the gas station by itself with the environmental liability and the bulk fuel storage, it's not economical. But I'd like to see maybe the provincial tenders for the all the fuel for the power plant, all the fuel for Labrador Grenfell, the nursing station and the accommodations and the schools and all that. Maybe they should put the public tenders together and say, like, one of the requirements of being awarded this tender is to operate the gas station as well. And I think that they would be more than lucrative enough to make it profitable, because there's so much profit off of these huge bulk fuel supplies, right? So there's solutions there. If you look at the betterment, and if you look at the overall community good, like what we call the greater good, and I think that, you know, we got to look at Rigolet as a community, you know what I mean, as just looking at the gas station. And there's a lot of fuel consumption, so why not make the gas station a part of that? right?
And it appears to be tying into this whole idea of connecting these regions by road, because you talked about the environmental liability involved there, as I would imagine is the case in most isolated communities when it comes to fuel storage. Of course, it's got to be stored there for the entire winter and sometimes well into the spring, depending on what the weather situation happens to be. Is that part of the issue here, those liabilities and having to store all of that fuel?
Yeah, yes, it is. And like I said, the liability is actually quite expensive because of the bulk fuel. But like I said, when we look at the communities, I think we should look at the community as a whole and the region as a whole. Other than that, you know, Rigolet is a vibrant community. You know, they have good employment. They got a lot of social development there. They got a lot of infrastructure there. They're, you know, a huge tourist attraction. So the community is, like I said, the community is doing really well. So the only thing that could impact the lifeline of this community is the gas station, which is why it's a huge priority. But, you know, I think that's the way the Inuit and the Inuit do business, within the community. We look at the greater good. And so I think that we're going to have to solve the gas station problem for Rigolet by looking at the overall community.
Any solutions there on the horizon?
Well, I'm proposing to government now that they combine all the tenders for all the fuel and tie it into the gas station to make sure the community of Rigolet survives. That's the that's the best option. It's the most decent option, and it's actually probably the best economic option for Rigolet.
You shared a recent post about what's happening in Yukon and initiatives that territory has in place that you say looks after Indigenous people. What did you mean by that?
Well, sometimes it gets a bit discouraging when we look at what's happening on the North Coast, and I feel that we've been sold out. As a district, I think we were sold out a long time ago. And what I mean that is that the priority wasn't put on the people or the district. And I think what it was to benefit other districts and other businesses. And until things change, until they put aside those private business interests and their own agenda for other districts in the province, I don't think we can fully have reconciliation. I don't think we can actually accept reconciliation as valid, as credible, unless they do things that actually will benefit my district. And I'm not talking about, getting ahead or getting more than what we deserve or asking for too much. I'm just saying that we need to be treated the same as the rest of the province. And unfortunately, a lot of times with Indigenous people, we are accepting. We believe the government is going to be fair. We believe the government is going to look after us. But in actual fact, the truth is the direct opposite of that has happened on the North Coast, those six Indigenous communities. And it's about respect. Like when I talk about the problem with trying to heat your home now, our elders who can't haul wood or can't bring wood in or put it in the stove or, all their old age check or their pensions are going towards heating their homes. It makes them vulnerable. Normally they would be living at home totally independent, but sometimes they actually have to rely on other people helping them, and then sometimes that's sharing a home with somebody that don't have the senior's best interest at heart. Also with single mothers. Like, I didn't set out to be a champion of women, but that's one of the things that really bothers me is, the inability to heat your home sometimes makes single mothers very vulnerable because they have to turn to a man for the manpower to haul the wood and chop the wood. And I don't think in 2020 we should have to be dealing with that. We should be allowed to, we should have access to a road just the same as the South Coast, just as the same as Lab West, a road that brings a power line. And we are providing in my district, through Voisey's Bay, huge riches to this province. right? And they're going to rely on that revenue, those royalties, even more now that the offshore is having difficulty. And when you look at the mineral resources in my district, uranium, gold, diamonds, the huge potential there, you don't even need to have a fine, just the exploration alone will generate revenue for the province. And that's what we have. But like, how are we being treated? Like, I'm not bitter. You know, I'm not trying to be negative. What I'm saying is you have to be fair to us. And if you're not being fair to us, don't try and talk to us about reconciliation, you know, because the thing about it is we have been treated, you know, we've been treated this way for so long, and people see it now. We recognize it. You know, we have the Innu Nation, you know, as they got their own power, their own ability to see things in the light, and they got their own voice. The Inuit, the Nunatsiwit, we have the power. We have our own government. We have our own voice. And so if you want reconciliation with the six Indigenous communities, you need to step up. We have the runway in Nain, the largest community. The runway in Nain don't have any nightlights. So a pregnant woman has to leave earlier on in her pregnancy. If there's a medevac in Nain after dark, you know, there's a good chance that that person is not going to make it because the plane can't land without the nightlights. And this is going on. This is year after year, and they're still talking about it. Right?
One would think that would be a fairly simple solution. Now, how come there's been no action on that then?
Well, the thing about it is it's taken so long to get to the point where they can actually plan the runway. And, you know, with the new runway, you got to put in a road. So, they're doing work on the runway now to extend the life of the runway. But that's just so that we don't run out of time. Right now, you know, and it's been going on for years, the Nunatsiwit government was trying to get, the airstrip moved because where that airstrip is physically impossible to put night lights on. It interferes with the flights, right?
My guest today on Target St. John's is the MHA for Torngat Mountains, Leela Evans. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today on Target St. John's is the MHA for Torngat Mountains, Leela Evans, and she's been talking about some of the issues facing her district. Leela, you mentioned, we talked a little bit about that post that you had shared about what's happening in Yukon and initiatives there that help Indigenous people in that region. Do you think Labrador could benefit from being a territory?
Well, just look at my district now, North Coast. Why didn't we all the problems we have now because we don't have that road that was built for the South Coast and for Lab West. So we don't have that road that should have been built. Now, looking at that, is if my people, if it was impossible or if it was financially too much to build a road, you know, and it was for the greater good of the province, I think my people would have said, yes, you know, we could live without a road, and we'll bite that bullet and we'll endure the burden that comes with not having a road if it was for the greater good of the province. But when we saw the road being built to the South Coast and all the, you know, the environmental landscape very similar to the North Coast, the distance the very same, and same thing over to Lab West, we knew that they weren't building a road for us. But they should have, they could have. And, you know, that's the difference is we didn't like it because it was for the business. It really had to do with business, not just the business of Labrador, but individual businesses that were in favor with the government. The ferry is $14.5 million that gets spent each year for less than 6 months, and we don't even have, like, really good service because our food costs have gone up, our shipping costs have gone up. You know what I mean? So that wasn't for the greater good. That was for that business, for the marine transportation, for the bulk fuel. There's 33 million liters of diesel in Voisey's Bay standing there. And nobody says that that's not enough capacity. And then you look at the millions of liters of diesel in each community for the power plants. That would have been eliminated. So that's business. You know, we were sacrificed for the government business friends. And you know something? As an MHA, that's why I got elected. as a PC in a liberal district, and I had to run against one of my relatives. We were liberal from Joey Smallwood's days. I remember when my father climbed on over the rail and shook Joey Smallwood's hand. That's what we were. We were big-time liberals. So how does I come to run against my cousin? How does I come to run to defeat a very popular party? And it's because the people on the North Coast know that that's not acceptable. And everywhere else in the province now, we need to look and see, has this been going on in your districts? And I'm going to tell you, I went into Ning, and I was meeting, one of the first duties I had as elected representative, I arranged to meet with parents who had lost their kids to foster care, to kids in care, and also some of them had gotten their kids back, and I just wanted to talk with the parents and just talk to them about the issues. It was very, very emotional, and, you know, it was going to be a difficult meeting. And the first thing I said when I sat down, I said, you know, you elected me as your MHA. But I want to say right here at this table, you have to elect an MHA that's going to fight for your district, that's going to try to make things better. And if you see that I'm not doing that, you know, and you hold me accountable, if I'm not doing that, don't vote for me. We have to stop voting for our friends. We have to stop voting for our relatives. We got to stop voting just for a party that we think we like. It's not a hockey game. It's not Montreal versus Toronto. The stakes are too high. We have to start electing effective MHAs and member of parliament. And you know something? All in Newfoundland and Labrador can learn from that. Who are you voting for? Are you voting for somebody that's going to help your district out and going to fight for the greater good for Newfoundland and Labrador? If not, don't vote for them. It's very, very important. And that's what I said, and I say that every time now. Right? That's one of the things that I always say. Make sure you vote for somebody that's helping. Right? Not silent or not a part of the problem. Right? And I think that's why some of the things I say resonate with people in Newfoundland and Labrador. Because, like, that's how I feel. I think more as a person out there in the province as I do as a politician.
Do you feel more powerful in your current position or less so?
Do you
feel effective? Yeah.
Yeah, I am, because, like, I'm doing what I said. And one of the things I say, and this is my words, I'm going to shine a light. I'm going to shine a light on what's being done to us, right? What's unfair. And if they continue to do it, treat us unfairly, then they'll have to live with it because it's being exposed. The least that I can do is shine a light. So whether I was in government or whether I was in the opposition, because at the end of the day, you have to have a voice. But, you know, it just goes back to, you know, I try not to politic. You know, it's very, very important when you look at that. But just looking at, I'm just afraid sometimes that I'm going to get caught up in the politics. And for me, when I ran, it was never about politics. It was about trying to make sure that my district was looked after, and we were being treated fairly. And I wasn't asking for any more. And when you go back, like, we just lost in the States now, we lost a huge, you know, a huge advocate, not only for women but for about fairness and justice, Ruth Bader. I can't pronounce her last name there.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And you know, and she was about fairness, but she was also about passion, and that's why I have on my Facebook there: fight for the things you care about, but do it in a way that will lead others to join you. And I think that's one of the things that I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to shine a light on what's wrong so people can recognize it as being wrong. I'm not trying to twist it into something that appears wrong. It is wrong, and it's unjust. I'm not out there talking about things that's not important. These are very, very important things. Being able to provide food for your children, you know, being able to travel, being able to actually heat your house. You know, when I campaigned in the spring, there was houses that I went into that hadn't been heated for 3 or 4 days in the spring. And it's either because they ran out of wood or they ran out of oil or their machine was broken down, right? So the thing about it is we have to make sure we're looking after everybody, and that includes our most vulnerable. There's a lot of people in my district that have really good paying jobs with government, jobs at Voices Bay, you know, very good incomes. But the thing about it is there's also people out there that are on real low incomes or sometimes don't have income at all, and they are our most vulnerable. So I got to make sure that we're treated fairly as elsewhere in the province.
Do you feel with your style and approach that, you're welcomed within government, or are you, you know, sort of upending things from that perspective?
Well, I don't think I'm overly welcomed with the government members. I'm really lucky because the time I chose to run, you know, and I chose to run with the PCs was, you know, just having Chess Crosby there. And a lot of people don't know who Chess Crosby is. Like, the persona that people have, the impression people have of him out there in the province is not the Chess that I see. Like, the Chess that I see is more of trying to make sure there's fairness, which is what I'm about. And I think it goes back to his profession as a lawyer and advocating for people and, people who've been, hurt or injured or wronged. But I mean, he always comes up to me. Every once in a while, he'll come up to me and we'll have a talk. And, you know, he can relate to a lot of the issues that I'm dealing with. But with him, as he's trying to bring Brandon balance to the province, and I think with him, it's like with him, like, one of the things is he is probably the smartest person in the House of Assembly, but deep down he's got a soul for fairness, and that's all I can ask for is that, you know, my leader will look at fairness, because right now in my district we weren't treated fairly. And for him, it's not only about the PC's district, it's about all the districts, and it's about Newfoundlanders, right? Goes back to the fight in Newfoundlander. And it's unfortunately that the public don't see that. But I'm very grateful that I do have an ally for fairness. I you know what I mean? And I keep saying, like, just, I'm not asking for something that we're not entitled to. I'm not asking for extra. I'm not asking for something that the rest of the province don't have. You know what I mean?
My guest today on Target St. John's is Torngat Mountains MHA, Leela Evans. And Leela, when I reached out to you, I joked we might need two shows to talk about everything that needs to be talked about. I know we only just touched the surface. There are other issues you wanted to discuss as well. But unfortunately, we're out of time. I'll give you about a minute or so to wrap up. Your final thoughts.
Yes, one of the things I'd like to say to the people in the Flan and Labrador is, when I'm advocating, I'm not asking for anything extra, any kind of reward or benefit that the rest of the province don't have access to. That's all I'm saying is, with my district, I think we've been treated unfairly for a long time.
Leela Evans, I appreciate your time this afternoon. We are going to invite you back one of these days very soon. So I do appreciate the time you've spent with us this afternoon, and do keep us in the loop anytime there's anything on the go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The guest today was Leela Evans. She is the MHA for Torngat Mountains, and we'll be back tomorrow with another interesting show, just lining up a few guests there now. So do tune in for that, and I do appreciate you listening. Thank you very much.